Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. Here's Alana and friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-OK.
Little known fact about my guest today, a chance meeting with Henry Fonda when she was a college student changed the course of her life and then the course of all our lives, because now we are the great beneficiaries of her artistic talent as an actress and a playwright, a director, an author, an activist. Welcome the extraordinary Regina Taylor to the podcast.
A-OK.
Hey, everyone. My guest today is Regina Taylor. Regina is an actress, director, playwright, activist, and educator. Some of her plays include Bread, Crowns, Ubladi, Drowning Crow, The Trinity River Plays, and Stop Reset. As an actress, she is known for her roles in the film Saturday Church, The Negotiator, Courage Under Fire, Clockers, Lean on Me, and so many more. She became a beloved TV star, playing Lily Harper on I'll Fly Away, for which she received the Golden Globe Award and 3 NAACP Image Awards. She was the first Black woman to play Juliet in Romeo and Juliet in a production on Broadway. In an upcoming project, she will star with Viola Davis in a Showtime series focused on America's First Ladies. Viola stars as Michelle Obama and Regina as Michelle Obama's mother, the incredible Marion Shields Robinson. But today, on top of this incredible body of work, of which I've only mentioned the smallest amount of what this woman has done, I also want to talk to her about an incredible project she most recently curated called the Black Album Mixtape. I am so honored to have Regina Taylor on the podcast today.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for your support.
Man, you get a lot done in a day, is what I want to say. And never have you been more prolific than during shutdown. We are in and coming out of at the same time, a very, very critical time politically and emotionally and physically. The planet in this last year. And so I want to talk to you about this project that seems quite near and dear to your heart that was born out of this moment. And I'm going to let you take it away because it's yours. And I would love to hear anything you want to share about it.
Yes, it came out of 2020, the events of shutdown, COVID-19. Of George Floyd, of the very incendiary political race, of joblessness, of homelessness, of all of these eruptions, including racial hatred. It was all unfolding as we were being forced inside to sit down, to watch, to witness this roller coaster of a year, but not only to witness, to steep in it, to see how we got here, look back to see how we got here to this moment in time, and how we might move forward, changing directions, but whatever it is, whatever direction towards a better future became the question. Mm-hmm. So with that, thinking, steeping in it, and wanting to take action, one thing I did was to write a play called The Black Album Resistance 2020, what it is to be contemplating, what it is to be Black in 2020. I took that to the students of SMU, Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas, where I'm born, where I graduated, to these African-American students to give voice to what was going on that surrounded us in these times. That became then something I created online, rehearsed online, presented online, because trying to meet the challenge of how we continue to connect to audiences in these times, connect to individuals. How do we speak what we need to say in these times and have it be heard? That then led to the initiative with SMU of the Black Album Mixtape. It was to turn over these issues, these topics to the students for them to create their own pieces. And not only in the realm of the arts, so visual to create something musically, a dance movement piece, but also to open it up to various disciplines. And if it was a student who's studying law about voting rights that are being challenged, or a student who's studying medicine, to think about the changes in the industry over the last year. How do you reflect on these things? How do you talk about why African-Americans, people of color, are afraid of COVID-19 shots, vaccines, that takes you to history. So to open it up across the board, different fields for people to express themselves any way they want to.
So there wasn't a specific prompt. They could do whatever they wanted that reflected where they were in space and time on the day they created the thing.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Some were given prompts. Some were, you know, what's on your mind? Mm-hmm. What's on your heart? How do you need to express yourself? Was what was given at the offer. And people responded. It was then not only for students, it was for faculty. It was for community, friends, and that grew to be across this country. People responding on this platform. They were given an invite, a call, and a response. And the response was quite overwhelming in terms of what people had to say and how they said it. We, at the end of this, a year later, which was this past week, did a block party, online block party, celebrating all of the collaborations that we had across the country. And wow. That was quite exciting to take a look back on the conversations that were had. And with the Black Album tape, I had initiated some conversations, round tables, and some dinners, virtual dinners, that I called the Black Bone China dinners, where people gathered from different cities. We delivered blackened food on blackened plates and had these essential conversations about how we got here, who we are now, and that the conversations were inclusive, multi-layered, multi-dimensional, as is our Black gazes on the world that we live in right now.
So how can people, is it something that's available for viewing
yes.
to the public? Okay, yes. So we can all take part and enjoy or
yes.
experience yes. the pieces.
The blackalbummixtape.com.
That's yes. where it lives.
That is the platform, yes.
That is so incredible. I imagine you had hundreds of submissions and if not more, and to sit and spend time to both curate and
yes.
ingest all that work must be so powerful. When I went back and looked at all of the things I've had the privilege of seeing you in, I remember I'll Fly Away. Mm-hmm. I remember in particular an episode where your character went on the Freedom March. And that episode in particular has stayed with me, what is it, 20 years later? I mean, mm-hmm. right? When were you Lily Harper? What years yeah. of your life was that?
1991, 1992.
Yes. Okay. And yes. then I think like Denzel Washington, Sidney Poitier, Delroy Lindo, I mean, the leading men that you've had, and then Viola, the leading women in your life. I mean, you're just making yes. work in such great company.
Oh, thank you. I'm very excited about this present project.
Have you started?
Yes, yes.
Can you tell us? Here. What can you tell us?
I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia right now.
Okay.
Filming First Lady. With Viola Davis starring as Michelle Obama. And I am playing Marion Robinson, her mother. And you go through this, and you know, I love Viola Davis and I love Michelle Obama. So it's all great and wonderful. And to play Ms. Robinson is a joy, this iconic figure. Who I've admired so much, so beautiful, graceful, this quiet dignity and strength, and all these other colors in between that I get to play her is amazing to me. It's a great life.
Yeah. Well, where are you in the process? Are you just beginning? How long have you been shooting?
Yes, I'm just beginning. This is my second weekend.
Okay.
A great the storyline of Michelle Obama and Mr. Obama, Mr. President Obama, their story of how they met, how they are as a couple, the solidity of their marriage, what that's based on and how they raised their children. The fact that they brought the grandma to the White House with them to keep that stability in terms of family, that tribe. It takes a village in terms of raising and passing on that which is important in terms of family strength and unity. All of that is quite stunning in the revealing of that. And I'm really privileged to work on this piece.
You have spoken a lot about your own mother in previous interviews and her influence on your own journey as a human, obviously, but also as an artist. Yeah. And I wonder if you, speaking of mothers, powerful, beautiful mothers, can you talk a little bit about your origin story as an artist and where that intersects with your mom? And what was your mother's name?
Leonel Taylor is an artist. And she taught me to be an artist from a very early age, maybe 4 years old, being on the floor with crayons and construction paper, creating my own children's books. So even before I even thought I might be, I was creating. And it was very mindful on her part. She was a teacher, started out as a teacher. that she wanted to give me, empower me with writing my own narrative in this world. As people will write your story before your first breath, she wanted to empower me to do just that for myself, to think creatively, starting with the imagination, how you get here to there, to strategize from that imagination, to strategize, and then to roll up your sleeves and do the hard work of it, the task of it, that's how you get there to make concrete your dreams. What she gave me, one of the, I think, the greatest gifts that she gave me.
When did the dream become to be an actress?
It was, I was at SMU, journalism major.
And
I was wandering down the halls and saw Henry Fonda. And he was at SMU doing a broadcast of a play, Oldest Living Graduate, broadcast live TV. And I was just following him down the hallway, too shy to say hello, and stalking him. Someone saw me stalking Henry Fonda and said, "Are you an actress?" And I said, "Sure." And she said, "Well, there's an audition this weekend, off of Route 75, Motel 6, do you wanna go?" And I said, "Okay." So I made up a resume, typed, so you know around what year that might be.
Yeah.
Typed up a fake resume, took a Polaroid picture, and took my biggest cousin. My biggest cousin drove me to that audition just in case.
Mm-hmm.
And it was legitimate. I walked in and came out with this role in this made-for-TV movie starring Joanne Woodward called Crisis at Central High, about the first students to integrate the Arkansas school system. So that summer, my summer break, I got on my first airplane, went to Arkansas and shot that film. That's how I became an actress.
Now, did you go back to school?
I went back to school.
You went back, even though you had the bug and tremendous success early on. So you finish, you get a degree, and do you then pivot from journalism to the acting program? Yeah.
Yes, it was when I got back. Yes, I became a full-fledged acting major. Continued my studies and learned how to. I had some good instincts, some raw good material, but really actually honed in on the craft. And I was very fortunate in that first time up to have such great people surrounding me,
mm-hmm.
Who were patient and kind. To help me through that first journey. So I went back to school, graduated, and then moved to New York and starred for a while, did that whole routine.
So you're from Dallas, you said?
Yes, yes.
You graduate from college. Do you have family in New York? How do you literally, like, where do you stay? What happens? You get there.
I get there. And this is where, you know, this business is about, connections. So folks that I went to school with, college people who had moved to New York City, you give them a call, you got space on your couch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a little rug and I'll sleep on the floor, a little bag or something, you know, or you do roomies with, you know, four people in a two-room apartment type of thing.
And are you getting Backstage magazine and looking for auditions and showing up? Do you remember Backstage?
Oh my gosh, yes. Yes, you're too young to remember any of that. I don't know.
And the Ross Report had the agents and the casting directors and all of that.
Yes. And you got your little, you got your headshots, and then you made the little
postcard.
Yeah, the postcards, and you send out those postcards like every month, top of the month, you send it out. You look in backstage, you look at the Ross Report, you take down those addresses and you send that out every month. Yes, that was the hustle.
How did you break through when you look back? What was, I mean, now it's always little things that have to build
absolutely.
To the thing.
I know exactly what that was. That was Rosemary Tischler. She was the casting agent for the public theater, Joseph Papp's public theater. She had come to SMU while I was still in school, had done a workshop. She had conducted a workshop and said, oh, you're very good. Here's my card. Give me a call when you're in New York. A couple of years later, I give her a call and she opened the door to the public theater. She started bringing me in all the time on these auditions. I started out as extras, you know, spear carrier to.
Yeah. Townsperson number four.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Happy to have it, I'm sure.
Exactly. Very.
Yes.
Overjoyed.
Yeah.
Elevation to understudy for Alfre Woodard in Map of the World, to joining this company. Estelle Parsons was working for the public theater and directing three plays. And she created this multicultural company to do As You Like It, Macbeth, and Romeo and Juliet. And we traveled around. We didn't get to the park, Central Park, but we traveled around all the other parks in New York City, in the Bronx, in Jersey, in Brooklyn. We traveled to all the parks. And
you brought Shakespeare to the people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And during that time, I started out with small roles, and then I was so committed. I so committed to each and every one, and so happy that I was working for Joseph Papp at the Public Theater. I would after rehearsal, I would rehearse my lines, and as I was working my way through. One of the first characters I played was Peter in Romeo and Juliet. One line, hang 'em, Jack. And I rehearsed afterwards, hang 'em, Jack. I'd stay after rehearsal. Hang 'em, Jack, hang 'em, Jack. You have to see exact, you know, how to best, because I was committed.
Yes.
Everything. There are no small roles, they say. And I noticed one day as I was going through my whatever version of Hang 'em, Jack, that I smelled the cigar, coming from the rafters. And I looked up and it was Joseph Papp.
Wow.
Sometimes you find him in a corner or above, just surveying. And he was watching this child up in here after rehearsal, doing her lines so that she...
Her line! Her really half a line, in a way, but yes.
That's a line. That was a whole line.
That's right, baby. Yeah.
And I think he was impressed, and he was very encouraging in terms of going from that role to other roles in the other pieces, which number three in Macbeth to Celia and As You Like It to as we were traveling through. By the time we got to then our destination a year later was the Blasco Theater, Broadway. And by that time, I was doing Juliet. So I was the first African-American woman to play Juliet on Broadway.
What did that mean to you?
That meant a lot of rehearsal after,
not just hang 'em jack.
I was deeply honored. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it, deeply honored, felt a great responsibility in really, again, committing to that role. It was that during that time, I would get people afterwards talk to me, different ages, saying, oh, I never imagined Juliet is Black. I see her. With you, from younger people to older people, to be able to do that role on Broadway was a turning point in terms of my career. And, you know, one thing leads to the other.
Did your mom get to see you play Juliet?
No, she did not get to see me play Juliet. She did get to see me play other roles, yes.
So she was aware of what you had accomplished.
She definitely knew, yes, and she was very proud, yes.
Yeah.
She was my first cheerleader, cheerleader. So she did encourage me to take chances, to follow your heart, follow your dreams, and to live a creative life.
I think about your mom encouraging you to write children's books. And then not only were you Juliet on Broadway, your play was on Broadway. I mean, in theaters all over America, constantly, every day, there's a Regina Taylor play being done. But the idea that you have been able to not just persevere, but triumph in every lane you go down, and the number of opportunities you give other people, and the doors you open for other people constantly as a writer, as a director, as an activist, as a human. What a legacy.
I love the back and forth from actor to writer to directing, to teaching.
Yes. Before I let you go, is there a little known fact that you can share about yourself that pops into your head?
Well, I think what I do is to be of service. It is very much to be of service, to do things that have purpose, that bring some light, is what I enjoy doing very much.
What a joy to speak with you today. And the mixtape, if you could say one more time, the web address. Yeah.
The Black Album Mixtape. .com.
Okay, the Black Album Mixtape.com. And thank you, Ms. Taylor, for spending time with us today. What an honor.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
One more thing. So many of you have asked, how do you donate to the podcast? Well, it could not be easier. Just go to littleknownfactspodcast.com/donations. Instructions are clearly laid out, and I'm so grateful to you in advance for any donation you choose to make. But regardless, I have loved, loved, loved making the previous 200 and something episodes for you. I can't wait to make 200 more. I wish you a beautiful day. Stay healthy, be safe. Until next time.
Clouds can make the wind blow. Bugs can make the grass grow. So there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
The episode was edited by Nicholas Klar. We recorded in New York City. And the Little Known Facts theme song was written and recorded by Georgia Famusa with backups by Caleb Famusa.